This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
We have been having a lot of conversations behind the scenes, on the air, all over the place about mental health in our community. And it's probably way, way overdue and certainly been compounded by COVID-19. If you remember, Nick, not all that long ago, Rachel and Tim were in to talk about the unmet needs survey. They're doing it again, and they were kind enough to reach out and ask about being on, and we said, absolutely, of course. So Timothy, do I call you Tim or Timothy? That seems a little weird with the whole Timothy thing.
Tim is great. I write my name as Timothy just to honor my mother. She gave me that name.
I like that.
And so I like that when I have it written down, but call me Tim.
All right. Tim Mackin is the executive director of the Macon County Mental Health Board. Introduce people to what it is that you guys do, because I think that you guys do incredibly important work, but maybe not everyone is familiar with it.
Yeah, so the Mental Health Board, Macon County Mental Health Board, was created by an act, the Mental Health Act, back in 1965, and the community voted to create a mental health board, and it allowed for that. And what the Mental Health Board does is that it collects a tax levy that's part of the property tax that people pay. Is intended to fill unmet needs that the traditional system of funding doesn't cover, so Medicaid, insurance, and grant funding that the state has historically provided. And so we try to fit to fund unmet needs that those funds won't cover. And so we get about $2.5 million in levy funds every year that then get dispersed to the various behavioral health organizations, mental health, substance abuse, and developmental disabilities.
Okay. And how is that decided, who gets what? I mean, just the structure of all of it.
Yeah, that fits really well with what we're going to talk about today. So we do a triennial needs identification process. And in that process, we try to identify what are the unmet needs that the community identifies. And we altered that process when I first came on board to do a survey process rather than having a room full of people, mostly providers in the community, saying this is what's missing. We wanted a broader reach, and we wanted to get the community at large to say this is what we perceive as unmet as far as services and access to those services are. So we ended up with over 600 respondents to the survey last time, which compared to a couple hundred people in a room was tremendous.
All right. And so are you looking for certain expertise or experience, or is this just, basically open to the general public? I mean, what are you looking for as far as respondents are concerned?
We want everyone age 18 and older to access this survey and respond to it. So it's not just the professionals. We want them to respond, obviously, as well. But we really want the community at large, because it's one thing for those who work in the field to say, hey, we think these are unmet needs, and it's valid. But there's also the fact that the public can say, well, this is an unmet need. There may be services that they're not aware of that aren't unmet, but they don't know. So it helps us get a window into what the public perceives as what's an unmet
need. So much of life is connecting dots, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it really is. And there's also, we were just visiting with Drew. Tanya will be with us a little later today. God bless our healthcare providers. But sometimes the bureaucracy doesn't see the consumer end, right?
That's right.
I know it's important to Tanya. We've talked about it, weeks after weeks. And COVID being an accelerator, right? I mean, I think healthcare has changed forever. I mean, it's not going back to where it was. And wouldn't we be better to get somebody through an iPad than waiting 12 weeks to see somebody in person? Do you feel like there's the game-changing environment now on the mental health care front?
It absolutely has. As a matter of fact, this last COVID, we had provided additional funding, I believe, to ultimately 8 patients, two of which, Crossing was one, to allow for the expansion of technology to get it in the hands of the people that needed to access services through telehealth and telepsychiatry. And that was something we read with people being homebound and even staff working remotely. How are they going to serve that population of folks?
So, even the idea that it's called tele is enough to tell you about the bureaucracy, which is amazing to me. Rachel's in with us too. Get a little closer if you don't mind, Rachel.
Yeah.
You're the performer. What is it you love about your job?
Oh, gosh. I think that it's always nice when you are doing something where you feel like you're helping people. You know, you have purpose and you are there. Even when we have people call us and they're not looking for services through us, because we don't actually ourselves provide, mental health services. But when they call and we can help point them in the right direction, when you talk to somebody who is really struggling, or they have a family member who is struggling or a friend who's struggling, and you can actually, connect them and get them linked in with services, even if that's just being, you know, friendly and offering a helping hand.
All right. Talk to me about the survey and how people can actually access this and participate. How long does it take? What does it consist of? And where do they go to find it?
Sure. So you can find it on our website. That's mcmhb.com, Macon County Mental Health Board. There's a link on there. And when you access it, so there are three different areas of disabilities that we're looking at. So we're looking at mental health and mental illness, and then developmental disabilities and substance use as well. And so when you go to select one of those, or you can go back and do all of them if you want. And then it breaks it down by age group. So, you know, even if you have no idea about substance use in the area, or you have some, you know, experience with developmental disabilities, or have someone in your family, you can complete just that section. So the survey is open until January 28th.
Okay, so they still have a little over a week or so left to be able to do that. Tim, I feel like the dirty secret in every community is that even if everybody stepped forward tomorrow that needs the help, there wouldn't be the availability to deliver that. Am I wrong in that?
No, and it's been compounded by the pandemic. We recognize there's been a shortage of qualified people in the field. I would say psychiatry itself, since I came to Illinois back in 1995, it's grown progressively worse. It's now at a crisis level. Accessing professional people that can do counseling and therapy, I know probably every organization that hires clinicians are short. They can't find the qualified people. So what was already a problem before the pandemic has been compounded dramatically by it.
So breaking it down, let's start at the user level. There's stigma attached to this, and you can do PSAs and you can do whatever. I mean, I don't know how much impact that has. People are afraid to admit it. People are, they don't talk about it. You have entire families and generations that don't talk about it. What do we do about that?
So it's a real important point, and I think it's important for listeners to recognize the level of pain and suffering it takes for someone to actually pick up, walk through the doors of a place to get help for mental health issues or for substance use issues. There is still, even though we've come a long way, is tremendous stigma related to that. So it takes a lot of courage to come through those doors or pick up that phone and ask for help. So when they do, where do they call? What do they need to do? And that's the part. It was a civic organization a couple of years ago, and it was before I was in this position, but I asked the people there, how many of you are aware of this organization? And these are people who lived their entire lives here. These people were averaging probably 70 years of age, and half the room didn't raise their hands. They'd never heard. So there's a lack of awareness in general, despite the fact you could have been here for 60 years.
All right, this may be very simple, but to me, outside looking in, as someone whose family has gone through this, who has experienced this, who has, you know, been in that arena, the stigma part is the first part of, like, you know, afraid to ask for help, don't know how to ask for help, don't realize how many people are going through the same thing. Then there is the bureaucracy of seeing the front of it, right? And then there is the lack of enough people to have the help. I mean, it's like a three-stage problem, right?
Correct. So
is that too simplified?
No, I think that sums it up. And the reality of it is, and for those who are, especially if they're having a crisis in the moment, there are phone numbers you can call. You can get immediate access to that. Well, how do they become aware of that?
Yeah, and then who do they trust? You know, the internet's a big place, right?
That's,
and I mean,
right,
there's all kinds of, I mean, how do I know, you know, what the experts say? Yes, this is a good start, right?
Right.
I mean, I think part of that we can do, the community as a media company, working with folks like you and the other leaders in our community, is at least create something that's a safe space for people to go and trust,
right,
and they know, okay, this is a link I can go to, this is an 800 number I can call, this is somebody that I can start this process with.
Correct. And, you know, we've discussed this as it related to the opioid epidemic in previous discussions about you creating a website and doing those things, but how do you get people to go to the website?
Yeah.
So how do you get that information disseminated and get people to actually have it in their awareness? Oh, this is where I can call, this is what I can do to access these services. So collectively, it's a really important
piece. All right. Personal experience, once again, you get to the finally, a doctor's appointment where you can, and they insist on face-to-face, which I don't understand why, with the technology we have, it couldn't be easier or even more streamlined or impact more people if we simplified that process. You go to an office, peeling off the wall. Every sign in there is treating you like a prisoner instead of somebody who needs care. That front end of that is a horrible space.
Yeah.
For people who are incredibly vulnerable and got the strength to ask for help, and you feel like you're at the DMV.
Right. So how do you warm, welcoming space where you're going to feel comfortable and safe is really important.
And not a number, because that's what you, I mean, you really feel like you're just pulling one of the deli things off.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do we do about that? I mean, how do we start the conversation? I know we're not going to fix it overnight. You're not going to fix all of these areas, but they are all areas that we need to be addressing as a community.
Yeah. And I think this is, I know, I just had a meeting yesterday with Tan Andrick and Debbie Bogle.
Yep.
I think the first part, that first step you mentioned, is something we need to start with. What is that awareness? How do we get a location, a place people can go to get that information? How do I access this and make that happen? I think the timing was good on that conversation. We had just recently in our last board meeting had a discussion with the board about we need to probably put some of our funds towards, whether you want to call it marketing, but public awareness, as especially related to substance use. We've had a tremendous increase since the pandemic in overdoses, for example, and overdose deaths. We've had a tremendous increase in suicides, which was already on the increase. I was even part of my presentation 3 years ago with this whole process. We'd already seen a huge increase in suicides then. It's gotten worse. So,
And teenagers and kids because of, you know, like I said, you know, we've lived through this like everybody else has, right? I mean, you know, our guy missed his entire junior year of high school, you know, yeah, in person. And that's easy as when you get older to got to go, you know, it's high school, you know, but we don't, I don't think, understand what that has done to people and just not having, you know, the presence with other people and social functions and all of those things. I mean, this is going to be impacting them for a while.
Tremendously. I think we tend to forget, human beings, we are social creatures. We our existence depended on that social connectedness. And when you take that away and it's reduced drastically or eliminated, how do you gain that? And while there is social media and there's Zoom, it's not true personal.
Well, oftentimes the social media algorithms are feeding you the wrong stuff and not the right stuff. And that's a whole problem in and of itself. All right. Once again, Rachel, the web address is mcmhb.com. Okay. Yes. I never know if it's or.
That one is com.
And you can get to the Focus on the Future 2022, which is the Unmet Needs Survey. And you can participate in all of it or just your part of it, whatever you want to do. And January 28th, I believe you said, is
yes, the survey's through January 28th. And then Focus on the Future is March 1st, which is an event where we will actually present the survey results.
Okay. And that is, at least as of now, planned for the Mount Zion Convention Center. I get all that's you know, what the community looks like at the time. So this open December 15th, will be open through January 28th, and you can click right there to do it. And I'm assuming people can do this. It's private. I mean, they're not giving personal information, all of that, right?
Right. It's all anonymous, so we're not collecting email addresses. You know, we do have some demographic information because that gives us, you know, we're able to analyze that and gain some information from that, but it is anonymous.
Well, I would assume too you'd like to hear from the front end of this, because I'm telling you, I really do believe, and this isn't a knock, it's just the consumer experience versus the battery experience is often very, very different.
Absolutely. And I think if the system is going to improve and move forward, pandemic or not, it's got to be consumer focused. It's got to focus on that more than ever. It's important that, that happen. It happens to happen in primary care as well.
Yeah. And there's also what you can do. You know, it really hit me. I mean, I've always known, I didn't realize that there were doctors out there that were literally prescribing to museums to patients, you know, because of consuming art. And Rachel, you're an artist. I mean, the idea that there are things you can do as a community level, right? You don't have to be a medical expert to have more art or to do campaigns. And I think there's some exciting area in here that you can build awareness at the same time.
Well, and I think even just talking about it amongst ourselves, you know, as a community member, you know, talking to your friends and talking to people you know, not being ashamed if you have to seek out services, and knowing that it's okay to not be okay. We all go through that, and that the best thing you can do, it's very courageous to reach out and ask for help.
Well, we appreciate the work you guys are doing. Thank you very much for sharing the information, and I'm sure these conversations will continue. I'm excited about doing something about this. Yeah. I think you just got to start. Sometimes the problem's so big that people just get paralyzed at the start end of the race, right? You just got to put one foot forward and start doing a better job as a community. I think we can do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Tim, Rachel, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you
for having us.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.